It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Well, you ever have one of those days where you think, all right, maybe fate won't rear its ugly head, right? Maybe you think that.
It didn't rear its ugly head on the Pirates today.
Well, for a hot minute, I thought it was going to. I thought maybe there is something to this arena being built on an Indian burial ground. You know, I said, maybe there is something to this.
Hey, whatever but, it is, we've got good luck in that arena. Mike Schwartz has won a tournament game both of his years there.
Yeah, that's true.
Women's
that's
team back to back championship game appearances.
Didn't get to the winner's circle last night, but that's true. And so what I saw happen that I kind of thought was interesting is that the free throw situation with the Czar missing the two, and I thought here they're going to lose by 1 or 2 points, is what I thought was going to happen. Didn't you when all that went down?
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, I thought I only had to deal with it in the mornings. I thought to myself, yeah, it's going to be the Pirate luck, and what's going to happen is they're going to wind up losing by two because of the dunk that Azar had, and he threw the rim. I liked that they had to go find the guy, and they brought out the level. I thought that was really a neat deal. I really did. I thought that was kind of cool. So 84-79, the final Pirates win. Ezra Azar went bonkers with a double-double. Where's that been for the last few weeks? 28-10. Brandon Johnson gets a double-double, 15-13. Another one for him. Haggerty got his 29. And then Felton with 19 in the win. Let's do a Pirate report, Pilk, and hear what's going on with the post-game thoughts of Coach Schwartz, Ezra Azar, and R.J. Felton. Hit it!
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
All right, Coach Schwartz talking about the hard-fought win.
Yeah, really was all game long. Obviously, a lot of respect for Tulsa and Coach Conkle and all their players. I mean, that's a dynamic team that I think is playing about as good as anyone in this league the last 2 weeks. And so very proud of our guys and their effort to come out and find a way to grind that out as they kept walking us down.
And Coach Schwartz says it was great to see Ezra Azar come through in a big way.
It was great to see the Ezra Azar we know. And
yes.
I'm just so proud of him. You know, forget that. I don't even know what his stats were, but it was the heart and the spirit that he had, and I'm just really proud of him.
And Coach Schwartz on saying it was about time the team, or it's about his team playing in March. That's what he said. It was about his team playing in March.
Bobby Pettifer, Jaden Walker comes in. No, every Asir and Cal gave us good minutes. A team effort. Anything you do in March is always team.
And let's see here. The Pirates also talked about, or Coach Schwartz talked about, we knew we had to get into the paint in order to win, and they did. They did a great job of attacking the paint today.
We knew we have to get to the paint, whether it's offensive rebounding, whether it's driving the basketball or throwing the ball down low to Ezra, Brandon, and RJ. These are our three guys that we post. You know, Brandon's not up here with us, but those three guys we have full confidence in. And a lot of teams use a double team like Tulsa did tonight, and I thought our guys did a good job getting it out of there. But we're not going to win a three-point shooting battle versus anybody. Tulsa hits 10 threes or 11 threes, whatever they hit tonight. That's never our game plan going in. You know, we're going to shoot it. But we knew we have to get to the paint, and I thought these two guys and Brandon did a great job of it.
And Mike Swartz talked about the Pirates' production down low. Back to cut two.
Well, the emphasis, and we knew. I mean, look, they made 10 threes or so. I think it was 10 at the last media timeout. I think we had 6 threes. And, you know, we know right now that's not how we're going to win the game, trying to win a team, beat a team from the three-point line. So we had to get the ball to paint, and so proud of Ezra Asar and his bounce-back game and going to the paint and playing. But everybody, but Ezra, RJ, Brandon, you know, our big three guys, and then to want to do it a physical way, I think, is a good thing for us.
And back to Coach Swartz, who was asked about trying to put together a run in this tournament.
I'm definitely not thinking about it in terms of a run. I'm thinking about it in terms of what you just said, that we knew playing one of the hottest teams in the league. We had obviously lost 5 straight. The last 2 very heartbreaking, gut-wrenching losses, the SMU game on the road and Charlotte at home. And you know what I've always loved it about this team, these 2 guys next to me and everyone else in the locker room, is that every day in practice, every film session, whatever it is, there's an excitement and an energy to try and get better and be ready for the next game. And I thought for the 3 days we prepared for this, as we traveled here, the guys showed that. And I don't think we win the game if they don't have that. So I give them all the credit in terms of their mindset and mentality. Would we have liked to have not ended the season that way? Of course. But you know what? It's a fresh season. We're in the conference tournament, and you had to go try and go 1-0 today, and we got that accomplished.
Let's see here. What else do we have? We have Coach talking about how the conference tournament, he talked about this leading up to the game, that this was a reset opportunity, a reset moment for him.
I think everybody in the country goes with a reset, and I think the only time you don't want to reset is when you're playing your very best basketball down the stretch, and even then it becomes a reset. And I've been a part of those programs too, where you have extreme winning streaks or playing really good, and you almost, you know, feel like you just want to keep it going, but you have to reset. You get 3 or 4 days off, you travel, it's a totally different feel and environment. And again, the maturity and I believe the resiliency of our players is what allowed us to reset. And we got back to doing some of the things that we had done well when we were playing our best basketball in early February, which was assisting on made field goals. We had 17 assists, offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding at a high level. We won the rebounding battle today. And those were the areas we focused on going into this game.
And we hear from Ezra Asar, who just went bonkers today, on what led to him playing so well.
I'm just out there playing hard. You know, I'm not playing for no points or anything, really. I think I'm more focused on the defense and just my intensity of just playing hard all the time, and the game just came into me.
And Ezra Asar on and Coach Swartz on what made the rim mess up. So let's hear that whole thing. I think this is, because again, I thought, oh, this is it. This is what it's going to be. Ezra missed the free throws after he was getting to the line because of this.
It was that breakaway dunk that made the rim crooked, man.
Yeah, Steven, it definitely wasn't me hanging on the rim. So.
Nah, I noticed it at the free throw line. When I dunked the ball with power, I know Coach Swartz said it's going to be hype for me, so I had to go punch that one.
And R.J. Felton on how the other guys played well, and that opened up the floor.
Wherever they primarily focus on me, that's going to open up for the guys. Like when I drive and when the defense collapse, that's gonna allow Brandon and Ezra to go to work. I mean, that's what happened today when 2 guys came in. It was open kick, and they knocked down shots. Ezra had a hell of a game, and I hope we can carry that over to the next game.
Now, you know, I thought they kind of let him play, but I'm looking at it now, Pilk. I didn't realize this, but there were 67 free throws shot in this game between these 2 teams.
Yeah, of course, a lot of them were, you know, fouls that were intentional at the end, but still.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Still,
yeah, the Pirates were fouling
at
Pirates were up. Well, it's a lot of fouls for March.
Yeah.
It was a lot of Pirates were up 3 at the end and were fouling, so Tulsa didn't get a chance to take a 3. Which Tulsa hit 11 threes on the day and really hit them in the second half. But yeah, Pirates, 24 makes, 35 attempts, 6 threes themselves, shot 50% from the floor. I thought they, you know, Tulsa, started out a little slowly. I thought they did a decent enough job on Haggerty, who ended up with the first point or the first field goal for the Golden Hurricane. And again, Pilk, I kept thinking to myself, boy, this is going to be what does it, is the rim screwing up. But Pirates, you know, look good. Had the lead at the half, played Tulsa even in the second half. It was a really good game. You know, I thought, was it 72 or 73 that it was tied at late?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't remember.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. When they tied it late, yeah. Or actually maybe went ahead one, I thought to myself, ooh, this is a game that the Pirates have outplayed their opponent again, and it comes down to the last 5 minutes, and they were going to not be able to pull it out, but they did. Again, 28 for Ezra Azar, who was amazing today, 10 of 12 from the floor, 8 of 12 at the line, 10 rebounds. 15 and 13 for Brandon Felton with 19. And nice contributions from everybody else up and down the lineup. 7 points and 5 rebounds before fouling out for Walker in this game. And Callum Richard gave him some nice minutes today.
He had two big offensive rebounds early.
He did. Had an offensive rebound and then had a putback one time that I thought came in kind of a key moment. So that was kind of a blind hook shot, but that was good. You hit the nail right on the head. That is now the second time that the Pirates have won a game in that building with Coach Swartz's tenure. So I think that's a great thing. I really do. And I think that's a very big deal. So the Pirates getting a victory. And look, now they'll get a chance tomorrow at 1 to take on the top team in the American during the regular season in South Florida. Now, you know, USF probably wanted a shot at Tulsa, but they don't get it. And the Pirates, who lost to USF, will play them again. I say that because Tulsa beat South Florida to snap their win streak at the end of the season. And, of course, they had already won the conference regular season outright, so that really didn't matter. North Carolina won today. They looked very good in going out there and kind of imposing their will on Florida State, who kind of looked to me like they ran out of gas a little bit. Tar Heels, rather, with the big victory. Now, they didn't play a ton of guys. They were up 22 at one point and only had played 8 guys at that juncture in the game. So, you know, we'll see what how that goes as far as gas in the tank down the stretch. And then Wake Forest got beat by Pitt. Kind of came out sleepwalking. Pitt came out with their hair on fire. Later tonight, it is going to be Duke and State in the ACC tournament. So you've got that. And again, East Carolina will play South Florida. All right. Pirates win it 84-79. Pilk, do we want to do? We'll do a couple of the Coach Kim cuts. They lost last night, got down 18-3. And you can't win many games only scoring. They were fortunate to win in the semifinal, scoring just 16 points in the half, especially as high scoring as that game ended up being. Well, actually, it was the first game that was rather high scoring. That was more of the rock fight against UTSA. So they were lucky to win that, even though they only had 16 points in the first half. 18-3 was just too much to overcome, and it seemed like East Carolina was playing catch up from that point on. Coach Kim, talking about she was proud or is proud to be the coach of the women's basketball program.
I'm extremely proud to sit up here and say that I'm the head coach of ECU women's basketball. I love these young women as if they were my own daughters. And, you know, as I said yesterday, people don't realize that coaching has so much more to do than X's and O's. It's about teaching them life lessons. And tonight was a life lesson for us that we will learn from, we will grow from. We will take that with us out into the real world.
Also, Coach Kim on asked how hard it is to play 4 tough games in 4 days.
It's hard, you know, especially, you know, this year was supposed to be my deepest bench that I've had thus far. And so, you know, when Micah and Sunil went down, that made 2 freshmen have to step in and play that I was depending on, you know, coming off the bench and, you know, letting our bench be, you know, more productive and have more depth on the bench. But, you know, it happens. It's sports. You know, you can't make excuses. And, you know, like as I said before, you know, we had some really good runs this year. I still told the girls, you know, when those two went down, that we still had an opportunity to win it. We still had an opportunity to compete for a championship, and we did that.
And this on being Danae McNeil's last game as a Pirate.
The thought of that being her last game in an ECU uniform is kind of hard to swallow. She's meant so much to this program, so much to my family, so much to Pirate Nation. She's helped put this program on the map. And I will forever be grateful for everything she's done for this program. She'll go down as one of the best Pirates.
Yeah, two-time Defensive Player of the Year. And I know it was tough for Coach Kim and for Danae to kind of have it in like that. I know there was some maybe hope that there might be a way, because they've got not only the WNIT, but the WBI, which is an NCAA-sponsored event this year that they've started doing that is like an NCAA thing that allows, I guess, 16 more teams to have an opportunity at the postseason. But, you know, it didn't I don't think it's going to materialize. It's tough to finish in ninth in a conference that's going to be a one-bid league and expect to play in any of those games. I mean, if enough teams maybe turn down invitations, who knows? But I do think that was most certainly the last game for Danae McNeil in ECU uniform. And it's unfortunate she didn't have a better game for her. But she was a dynamic player and a tremendous player. I do find it unfortunate that Maya Joyner had another incident near the end of the game, and I think that's something that is going to have to be dealt with and addressed in a way that it doesn't rear its head next season, because she's too productive of a player, too good of a player to have all of these issues. And if you have all of these issues, it just becomes what you're known for and not your play on the court. And so I hope this will be an off-season of growth for my, as they call it. Okay, we're taking a break. Let's shift our gears to baseball. We're going to talk to Mike Mullis, preview this weekend. Also, big game locally tonight. We'll talk to Mike about that. And again, the Pirates win today over Tulsa in the 8-9 game, and they'll take on the top seed tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And you'll hear it on 107.9 and 94.3 The Game, and that will be ECU and South Florida. All right, we'll be back with Mully talking some ball right after this.
I want to take a minute. You ready for this?
Oh, I'm very ready. Okay, ready?
You ready?
Streaming to the world at 94.3thegame.com. This is the Patrick Johnson Show. Now in all his glory, here's the P-Man.
Mike Mullis, you know him, you love him, and it's a Mully Thursday here on the Patrick Johnson Show as we go to the one and only Mike Mullis. It's a ball day, Mullis, a ball day.
It's March Madness ending, buddy. That's the time of the year. We got the crossover season and lots of great sports entertainment, I mean, both on TV, and I don't think any – maybe the biggest game in town is the Rose Conley baseball game tonight. So lots of good stuff.
That's what I was getting at. Rose v. Conley tonight. This seems like this is awfully early to be playing this in the season.
I would think both sides agree. I think both teams would have rather have played into this game. I mean, you know, we've only been out three times, and so this is our fourth game, and I think maybe they may be a game or two ahead of us, but still not having played much. And both teams kind of trying to figure out, you know, who's who and what's what in early season high school baseball. But, I mean, you know, look, these two teams get together. It's the old, all the cliches apply, right? You can, both teams are undefeated, but if they weren't, you could throw out the records and you could all the analytics and whatever don't matter. There's a lot of emotion and passion, and more probably importantly, a lot of familiarity with both the players, the programs, the coaches' staffs, and even the fans in attendance. So it should be a good time. Weather's going to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, JV game before the varsity game. JV goes around 4, and the varsity game starting between 6:30, 6:45 is kind of the plan. So, yeah, man, it should be a lot of fun.
Full disclosure, Mully is the one of the assistants at Conley this season. 6-0 Rose, 3-0 Conley at Conley tonight. Great weather. Should be good. All right, Mully, give me the skinny on the Rampants. I know you've studied them. I know you know what to expect out of a Ronald Vincent coach team as he is going into the Hall of Fame effective this week, which I think is great.
Yeah, and there's not enough Halls of Fame to hold Ronald Vincent honors and the career he's had. It's just, I mean, it's, you know, the numbers speak volumes, and the number of wins and the number of state championships, the number of players that have gone on to play past Rose, and, you know, the impact that RV and the Rose program has had on Eastern North Carolina and is a, you know, a high watermark for the state and for all of high school baseball. So, yeah, I mean, you know, as a team, I mean, it, you know, they've got, I mean, it's a Rose High team, right? Going to be full of talented players, and they've got, you know, some front end arms that are really good. And, you know, obviously the Walling kid is kind of the, you know, the bell cow for them, and expect to see him at some point tonight. You know, it's a little bit different than college baseball where you don't know exactly who the starter is going to be, but you kind of, you know, you go with your gut feeling, and then halfway behind him. And, you know, again, talent up and down the lineup, they're going to play good baseball. They're going to play a little bit of a different brand of baseball from the standpoint of they're not very reliant on small ball. They're not, their deal is to come out and go toe to toe with you, and, you know, swing the bats and just kind of put their best out there, get your best, and it's worked out more times than not for Coach Vincent.
Your Conley team's got 5 home runs this year, and that's through 3 games. So give me an idea of what to expect out of the Vikings tonight, Mully.
You know, it's so early, and yeah, 3 games in, and it all depends on who shows up, PJ. We have the ability to be a really good club. We, you know, we're trying to kind of settle into what our kind of offensive philosophy and approach is going to be. And, you know, the pitching staff to this point has been really, really good. Matter of fact, a staff no-hitter last game out on Tuesday against Havelock. We had 2 guys combined, Ryan Johnson, Landon Coleman, for a no-hitter up there. And then the game before that, we had a staff 1 hitter, so the pitching has been really good, and we're just trying to figure it out offensively. I mean, it's you know, so I don't know. We obviously want to be aggressive in the zone and facing good arms. You know, you don't want to put yourself in a position to have to hit behind in the counts against guys like they have. So, you know, we're gonna go out and look to be aggressive and, man, swing the bats, and again, just, man, enjoy the beautiful weather and playing our buddies from across town. And I mean, it's just, you know, we'll kind of see where it is after 7.
All right, Mike Mullis with us here. Looking forward to Mully again when he'll be back in the TV booth, which will be a couple weeks away. But he'll be on the high school diamond, as it were, between now and then. All right, Mike. Let me ask you about the win this week for the Pirates at UNCW, a game in which Wilmington tied it up in the 9th, but the Pirates put a lot of pressure and forced a mistake that led to the winning run.
Yeah, you know, obviously a win's a win, and a good win, and the kind of the thorn in the side that Wilmington has been for the Pirates. So, you know, you'll take it. I think the big takeaway for the Pirates to say, you know, we're an older club now, right? I mean, you've got guys that are around that are experienced, and maybe the staff at this point is probably waiting to see the actual maturity catch up with the age, if that makes any sense. They want to see the swagger of going into the ballpark, knowing that we have an older club, and that, you know, teams that we need to put away, we have to put away. We have to have somebody that wants to get that big hit. And then obviously, you know, when you have an opportunity to close the game out, you can't make the simple mistakes. And that's, you know what, that's kind of all levels of baseball, right? I mean, the teams that win play clean baseball. So I know that it was probably in the minds of the staff a little bit of a discouraging win from the standpoint of, man, you know, we had to do an awful lot to win it. And I think Cliff even referred to it as being lucky to win that game. But It's a win. It's a win against Wilmington. It's a good run here. Three big games at Liberty, and then you roll into a weekend series that you feel like you should have a chance to sweep as well. So, a good little run here for the Pirates. And this is kind of what we've grown to expect historically with Cliff Godwin teams. That this is where the records are this time of the year, right? I mean, we've seen it kind of back and forth at times, but this is what we expect. And I think going into the conference there, they're in a good spot to continue to mature and continue to figure out how to do the small things that are going to round them out and hopefully have them ready for postseason play.
Oftentimes, Mully, Coach Godwin, and rightfully so, touts the team GPA. I have to imagine that this might be a team that has a better GPA collectively than the Pirate team. No knock on anybody.
Yeah, 100%.
Just facts, because Columbia comes to town. And
yeah, I tell you what, they don't want to get into a spelling bee with this crowd. I mean, you got an Ivy League program coming in, and quite frankly, if you look at the baseball side of things for Columbia, they're going to do well in their conference, and they've gone out and played some pretty good competition to this point, but they've given up several big innings throughout the season to this point. I mean, they had 38 put up against them one game. They've had some football scores put up against them. So you would expect that the Pirates should be able to come out and have some success offensively. And again, that's where the staff is like, all right, we kind of know what we have in Columbia coming in. We need to go out and play to our level of ability. And really make a statement, but win three games the way that they should be won.
Now, in fairness, Irvine is who they had score huge days on him. And Irvine is in the top 25, 32-2 last Friday, 25-7 last Saturday. Wow.
Yeah. No, that scored them in boatloads. I mean, that's a bunch of runs, and I don't, pride plays in. These are Division I student athletes, and they do take pride in what they do. They're not accepting of that, but Columbia is still one of those true bastions of student athletes. I mean, I had a chance to talk to former ECU running back and now running backs coach Jason Nichols at Princeton, and he's just getting up there and just took that job recently and kind of getting his legs underneath him. And he was home visiting. We just happened to run into each other, and the number one thing he said, he's like, "Mully, these are student athletes. Like the NIL doesn't play here. These are student athletes, and it's just a different deal. Not that they're not really talented players, but the focus is on the student side."
Mike Mullis dodging traffic as he joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. And he will be on the diamond tonight for for Conley and Rose as they meet in baseball for the first time. We've got we got Mully on with us here. Mully, let me ask you a little bit about, we just read you off a couple of the scores from Columbia. I know Duke hammered App earlier in the year, something like 28-2. Seems like we're seeing a lot of runs put on the board by certain teams in bunches. Of course, East Carolina had a game where they scored, I think, 20 early last season. But is it just me because we're talking about it, or is this maybe something we're seeing a little more of, some big scoring days from certain teams out there?
PJ, I think there's definitely a trend there. Coastal kind of took Wake out behind the woodshed midweek, and very interesting. Wake is touted for their pitching and their pitching lab and how they develop pitchers, and they gave up 19 free passes. So I think it was 10 walks and 9 hit by pitch.
Wow.
And and talking to one of the guys from Coastal, he's like, he said they're frontline arms, and we're talking about Wake Forest, right? Started years, number one team in the country, and the great pitching staff and all these things. So I say that to preface this statement. He's like, man. He's like, well, they're frontline arms. Their big three are legit. They have a guy that's going to be a first rounder and potentially three of them. But he's like, man, they just behind that, they've got one or two guys out of the pen, but they just don't have the depth in the bullpen. And I'm like, that sounds familiar. And even, he's talking about their club. And he's like, we we really like what we can roll out on the front end. It's those back end guys. We're still trying to figure out who we can, you know, who we can trust with a you know, a leverage spot game to bring in to kind of shut it down. So I think, and my theory on it, PJ, is the NIL, and I'm sorry, the portal more than the NIL has had a big bearing on what you're seeing in depth of pitching, because if a guy doesn't get the number of innings that he wants in his current situation, but somebody else knows the value of him or saw him in summer ball and he goes out to play summer ball, that's, you know, the summer ball thing is like recruiting ground zero for portal kids. It's, you know, I've got a player that's playing with, you know, whoever, and, you know, Patrick Johnson comes over and he was a pitcher at East Carolina, and hey, you theoretically there's some legalities here, but it seems like a little bit of the wild, wild west, but I'm going to have my guy talk to Patrick and say, hey man, you know what? You didn't get but about 18 innings last year. You'd be a frontline guy for us. And then the NIL may come into play that situation, and you have a kid that enters the portal instead of riding it out and developing into a guy that can either be trusted in a bullpen or move to a frontline starter. So I think a lot of schools are seeing that. It is, I don't say an epidemic across college baseball right now, but there's certainly a lot of programs that are figuring out what the bullpen is going to look like. And I think at the end of the year and even halfway through the year, it's going to be interesting to see the numbers, the runs scored and the ERAs of the starting pitching, as opposed to the runs scored and the ERAs of the relief pitching around the country. I think it's going to be even potentially double. It's a real challenge.
We got Mike Mullis, and we're going to have more with Mully right after these words.
Philip Pilkington here with your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash update and Pirate Report. Starting in local high school athletics, two Pitt County schools are heading to the state championship. Farmville Central's boys defeated Goldsboro 74-54 last night to head to their sixth straight state championship game. It will be a rematch of last year's game against Reidsville. And the North Pitt girls defeated Seaforth 70-45. They will take on East Burke on Saturday. Looking over at the Pirates, the women's team season came to an end last night at the hands of Rice and what was their quest for a second straight AAC title. Danae McNeil and Amaya Joyner were named to the all-tournament team. The men's team has won their a tournament game for the second straight season with an 84-79 victory over Tulsa. This came after a five-game losing skid, and Coach Swartz said that March is a reset for everybody.
I think everybody in the country goes with a reset, and I think the only time you don't want to reset is when you're playing your very best basketball down the stretch, and even then it becomes a reset.
Tune in tomorrow right here on 94.3 The Game at 12:30 for that 1 o'clock tip when the Pirates take on the first seed at the South Florida Bulls. Elsewhere in the American Athletic Conference right now, Wichita State is up 68-62 on Memphis with 17.4 seconds to go. Shockers just got a defensive rebound, got fouled, and are going to the free throw line to ice the game. Live from the Players' Championship right now, Xander Schauffele and Roy McIlroy sit on top of the leaderboard here in day one at 7-under, one shot ahead of Nick Taylor. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. We will hear more with Mike Mullis on the other side of this timeout.
New opportunities.
Sometimes you just don't know if you want to kiss him or slap him.
Ow!
Either way, he'd probably like it. The Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
ECU baseball tomorrow on 94.3 The Game. And we'll have a Patrick Johnson Show for you. And then at 5:45, we'll have East Carolina baseball coverage with the pregame against Columbia. All right, Mully, obviously the starting pitching has been sensational for the Pirates this season, especially the weekend guys. But lo and behold, we're starting to see the bullpen, at least based on the series against Liberty, come around a little bit.
No question about it. I mean, Lunsford Schenkman has figured it out. You know, he started a little scuffly from where he would like to be from the standpoint of maybe, you know, a few too many walks, but has really settled in and been really good against a good Liberty team. So, I don't think we as a fan base need to look past those wins. Those are quality wins against a club that is, again, they're just an inning or two from figuring out how to win some games, being, you know, the Liberty team. But I think you're starting to see those guys, I say, come around and again mature. I used that word earlier, and then become accepting of roles and understanding, okay, this is what my preparation has to look like to be ready for the opportunity that I'm going to be given. And, you know, the preparation and routine for starting pitching as opposed to a guy that's throwing out of the bullpen are very different. That bullpen guy, you know, he's got to be ready to go every day and may get a chance to throw three or four times a week. I mean, shoot, look at Matthew Mateus at Carolina. Leads the country in wins with 7. And I think the next closest is like 5. And all of his wins are like two innings and a piece of an inning kind of wins, because he is ready and available to go out of the pen in these situations that could change ball games. So I think you're seeing that maturation process. And again, the accepting and understanding of the roles of being in the bullpen and how to go about doing that. You're seeing the Pirates kind of grow up in that aspect.
Jaden Winter's been awesome.
Yeah, oh yeah, and you know what? He's got some real. It's a really different look, and that's what you want. You know, he's coming out of the pen. He's kind of got a little funk in his delivery, and as long as he can be around the zone, you know, he gives you a chance. And I'm going to tell you the other one that I think is key. Really, I think is key for the long term success of the Pirates is Eric Ritchie. We've seen him. Mm-hmm. We've seen him have troubles throwing strikes at times, but man, his stuff is really, really good. When he kind of figures it out, and when that switch flips, he could be a guy, especially being from the left side.
Yeah,
he could be a guy that's really critical for the long term success of the club.
Yeah, he's a pen lefty, and I mean those are like the left handed batting catcher, Molly. Those are pretty valuable guys, as you know. So.
Yeah, and you know what? And I think his stuff is good enough that he's not a left-handed specialist. Mm-hmm. When he's got it going, he can pitch both sides of the plate.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, giving up looks, you know. And I think, you know, you're probably a left-handed specialist is Groler. He's a guy that you would think could come in and get lefty.
Well,
down.
I'm just saying, if you got an effective lefty, no matter what the role out of your bullpen, I mean, you're that's some house money right there.
Well, and you know what's not realized a lot of times, PJ, is not just the stuff, right? I mean, left-handed stuff is coveted, but what you also get with a left-hander is it shrinks the running game. You know, you become more apprehensive at first base because of pick moves. I mean, it changes. Eric's a good athlete, so his ability to fill the spot on a bunt, all these things come into play when you bring that left-hander, you know, out of the pen. So, yeah, you get a lot of bonuses by having that guy.
I want to ask you a little bit about the freshman, Molly, DiLorenzo, Jackson DiLorenzo. We've seen him get used a lot here early on, and it seems like he always comes in and answers the bell.
Yeah, you know, so early in the fall, I was out at practice and just, you know, they're getting ready to scrimmage and had a chance to talk to Coach Palumbo a little bit about some of the new guys and just conversationally about the team or whatever. And I saw DiLorenzo come out, and I'm like, man, look at this guy. Bartolo Colon is who came to mind. And kind of funny, body type-wise, I've heard the longtime Pirate faithful refer to him as a kind of a Corey Scott lookalike, for those that remember Corey. But but anyway, Jeff says, Molly, it is what it is. He's going to freaking come right at you. He's going to pound that 90 in there. You'll get a little better than 90 at times. Secondary stuff is developing. But he's a bulldog, and he's just going to come in there. And, I mean, again, it is what it is. Kind of a short arm fastball, little slider. But, yeah, he's a guy. Again, I mean, we're talking about a true freshman. So, it's a kid that gives you some excitement, not only for today but for the future, but a guy that certainly is serviceable right now. And a guy that really doesn't come across as a starter. He seems to be, and maybe it's the body type, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just my – kind of Freudian association, but that body and that stuff looks to me like a guy that could leave here with some saves records, and it could be a mainstay in the bullpen for the foreseeable future.
I want to ask you about the catching on this team, Will Coxon, and then McChrystal. Obviously, I mean, McChrystal had a hell of a throw the Carolina series in the game in Fayetteville. And then, you know, I mean, you have Will Coxon back there who seemingly out of the LeClaire weekend has started to pick it up a little. He went into that maybe with a little bit of malaise behind the plate in some people's mind, but he has really seemingly picked it up. So just your thought on that battery of guys that are platoon of guys that are part of the battery.
You know, I have felt like, and I think that and this is no conversation with the staff, but I felt like a big missing part offensively for the Pirates has been the production, offensive production from behind the plate. And the last time we saw Will Coxon at home, you saw him with two home runs, and obviously that's big to get back on, kind of get back on pace. And I mean, you know, you look at the, when you sit down at the beginning of the year and you're going, okay, we expect X number of RBIs, X number of home runs, blah, 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 from the guys, and you're trying to figure out where your production's coming from. And yes, that game's played in every coach's office. You know, you look at Will Coxon and McChrystal and go, okay, both these guys can give us double-digit home runs and, you know, a respectable RBI number. And you know, so it wasn't really working out early, but as you said, Will Coxon's come around. I think that the challenge with those guys, number one is to be healthy, and McChrystal, you know, fights the back issue. But I think that the number one issue is for them to be healthy. The number two issue is cleaning up what they do defensively, and really it's both of them. I think Will Coxon is a better handler of the staff, a better maybe overall catcher. Both of them have incredible arms. McChrystal is as good as you'll see anywhere. But figuring out those nuances, those subtle things behind the plate that you know, kind of buy strikes, that give you the edge from back there. And then Will Coxon is so easy to fall in love with, and you watch him, and he's really good for 5, 6, 7 innings, and then you have the pass ball, you have, you know, some of the stuff that just almost seems like there's a mental lapse there. So, you know, and quite frankly, you don't expect, and you certainly don't want to see that out of a senior guy like Will Coxon. But, you know, it's all again, I can continue to use the term maturation process, and that's what a lot of it is. And you know, you hope for the team's sake, for his sake, he figures some of those things out and can catch the complete game. You know, when I say complete game, like start to finish, great job, no pass balls kind of thing. So, I think they'll only get better. And look, the young freshman, we've seen him at the plate a little bit. He came in as kind of a light hitting catcher, but really good defensively. So, you know, I think you'll see him come along. And again, I mean, to have some depth back there is a big deal, and you don't have to solely rely on J-Dub to catch every inning.
Right. All right, Mully, what will you look for out of the Pirates against a team that has surrendered a lot of runs in Columbia?
Same thing. I would expect to see a lot more runs surrendered. I think, you know, and I mean that with that's kind of the expectation of, hey, we're an older team. We're senior heavy. There's some expectations that come with that, and it's probably time for the Pirates to start rounding out and playing consistently at those expectation levels. And I say consistently because we saw just that at Liberty, right? For three games, they went out, took care of business. Kind of had a lapse against the team in Wilmington that, let's face it, is not quite as talented as Wilmington teams that we've seen in the past. So we need to, you know, kind of get on the other side of that and, you know, start seeing – and this is a great weekend for start seeing those mature decisions, well-played games, you know, as close to perfect execution as you could possibly, you know, generate. And you know, but I think this will be a great weekend for them to figure some things out.
Hey, Mully, thanks a lot. And good luck to the Vikings and yourself tonight. Should be a great game.
Yep, out at D.H. Conley Hollywood Crossroads about 6:30, 6:45. And it should be a good one.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot.
Okay, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. There he goes. Mike Mullis. Great to have him on. Pilk, we've got some breaking news, and we will tell it to everybody when we come back here on the Patrick Johnson Show and get you ready for Pirate basketball tomorrow.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Everyone, a little breaking news for you.
Wichita State knocks off Memphis. Has there been a bigger team this year that's done less with more than the Memphis Tigers?
Do they let Penny on the plane?
Oh, they'll let him on the plane. Look, Penny can do no wrong there, but you got to think at some point. I mean, before Christmas, you could have made a case that they were a Final Four team.
At least a second weekend team, if nothing else.
Yeah, at least a second weekend. They had an injury to a guard. I get that. They, you know, they brought in some guys. I don't really think that was, you know, a huge chemistry disruptor, I don't think. But, you know, I just – to have Wichita State, and we saw Wichita State a few weeks ago, and they were lousy. It's a bad basketball team. But they've won two in a row. And look, I'll say this as well. Right now, if you're, that's a break in the Central Florida side of the bracket, I think.
South Florida side?
And I think it is. Or South Florida. It's
yeah,
a Freudian slip there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a break for South. Now, South Florida, we'll see what happens with ECU tomorrow. We'll see what ECU can do as far as legs. And if they can get the same kind of production from the big three they got today, they'll have a chance. But they've got to get that level of production because that's what they thought was going to happen all year. They were going to get that level of production. You need, I'm not saying you need 30 from Azar like you got nearly today, but you need him to be active, engaged, double-double area. You need Brandon Johnson in the double-double area, and you need RJ close to 20, if not eclipsing. If you can get 20 or better from two of those three guys, you're in every game. You're in every single game.
You are, Patrick. You're 100% right. And ones have not been safe against 8-9 teams. Okay? Earlier today, Richmond, one seed in the A-10. St. Joe's, the 9, lost. Same thing happened in the MAC.
But
I know it's different, but
Richmond's dreadful.
Same thing happened in the MAC. 8 beat the 1.
Yeah.
I mean,
Toledo.
Yeah.
Got knocked off, yeah.
Yeah, by Kent State. And I know we're not talking about the same level of teams as South Florida here, but it's doable. It's doable.
Well, and this South Florida roster, I mean, they caught lightning in a bottle, and we'll just see. But that'll be tomorrow at 1 o'clock. It'll be a 12:30 airtime on 107.9 WNCT and 94.3 The Game. We'll figure out everything with tomorrow's show, with the Pirates playing and my announced schedule. We'll just have to work through it. Pilk, are you ready to take the reins if needed?
Yeah, I would be.
Okay. We'll discuss it after you get done with your other duties tonight. So just, I'll be here if Pilk will. Somebody will be here. We have the Greg Laster interview tomorrow, which we need to get on for you as well. Big event coming up from Champions that I want to tell everybody about. All right, it is time to say goodbye for now, and we'll see you in the morning on Talk of the Town, and then 5 o'clock tomorrow with a postmortem of ECU basketball against South Florida.
Here with Jeff Stein at Brown & Wood, it's a great time to buy a used vehicle.
It's not a great time.